Okay, so today we're beginning our discussion of contraception. So we have gotten through our discussion of when it might be mutter to use any form of contraception, meaning when it would be mutter to delay or not be trying to have children for a married couple, but we haven't yet discussed any of the details of the specifics of contraception. So in order to understand the specifics, and I'll just put a big disclaimer out there at the very outset, as you probably know, I am not a doctor. As you may suspect, I'm not particularly well educated in this area, even for a lay person. And you know, there may be parts of this that you know better than me already, just based on some of your own experiences. But we'll talk through the inyanim as far as I see them and as far as I'm able to tell based on my research. So it's going to be a combination of mitzius and halacha, which I guess all of halacha is, but over here like a little more of an emphasis on the mitzius side of things, because I think very often when it comes to passing these kinds of shilas, a lot of people just don't know the mitzius. Someone just came over to me today and said that his wife has a very negative reaction to estrogen, and she gets migraines, and not his wife, his kala, and they want to be koveya her period before the wedding to make sure that they don't have a chupas nida, and they want to be on birth control. So what's she supposed to do? So if she can't have estrogen, like, is there any option? So he said that he asked a different rav, and the rav said, the only things I know of are the estrogen pills and IUDs. So there are like 10 different ways to, you know, meaning it's important to like be familiar with the different methods of birth control that are out there, so you can know at least what the person should ask their doctor. I mean, the person might say to the doctor, give me an option, but it's always better when you're going into a conversation with your doctor to have an idea of what's out there. Now, there is this great little tool called the internet where you can find a lot of these things, but certainly not reliable information, reliable, thorough information from a Torah Jew's perspective. You know, so that's so let's try to go through some of the issues. So first thing you have to know is, and I apologize if this is overly basic, but in order to understand anything about contraception, you first have to understand how pregnancy works, right? How does a woman become pregnant? So the basic, very abridged version of the miracle of creation of a human being is that the ovaries produce eggs that get released into the fallopian tubes. In the fallopian tubes is where the egg meets the sperm, because the sperm has traveled up through the vaginal canal and the cervix and the uterus and then into the, right, off to the sides, into the fallopian, I wish we had like, you know what I'm talking about, right? Into the fallopian tubes, and the sperm meets egg, and that's where the sperm is able to, that's where pregnancy begins, right? So now you can imagine, in order to prevent pregnancy, you need to stop something in that process. Meaning, woman creates egg, man introduces sperm, and sperm meets egg. So there are three ways that people thought of over the years to prevent pregnancy, right? One way is on the woman's side. Let her not produce egg or not have an egg that's accessible, right? A second way is on the man's side. Let's kill his sperm. Make sure that his sperm isn't able to do anything. And then the third is the meeting in between. Let's a perfectly viable egg and perfectly viable sperm, let's block it and make sure that egg and sperm do not meet, right? Those are the basic three approaches that you'll find through all of the different drachim, all the different ways that people have come up with over the centuries to practice birth control. Those are the three types. Those that kill the sperm, which essentially ruins the man's fertility. Those that kill the egg, which ruins the woman's fertility, and those that block the sperm from the egg. Now, the factors that we have to consider when we're looking at any form of birth control are essentially three types of factors. There are halachic factors, there are health factors, and then there are just other factors, miscellaneous. The halachic factors are primarily two things. There's the factor of sirus, that there is an issur in the Torah that you're not allowed to be mesaris an animal, kal v'chomer, a human. You're not allowed to be mesaris any creature, likely even an insect. You're not allowed to be mesaris. You can't be mesaris anything. So you're not allowed to sterilize an otherwise fertile creature. So that's one. And the other, so each type of birth control, you have to look at, is this some form of sirus? Is it sirus on a permanent basis, on a temporary basis? What is the halacha about temporary sirus? So that's one. And the other issue to look at is hashchasa zera. Again, this is assuming we've already looked at the issue of Peru Revu and we've already cleared that issue, right? I mean, that's what we did the last 3 days. But Hashchas HaZera is the other issue. There are two Isurim related to Hashchas HaZera. There's an Isur, the Gemara Nida, what is it, Tafir Aleph, around there, about Niyuf Biyad, right? That a person who commits Niyuf, he commits adultery, so to speak, Biyad, by hand. And there's a separate issue of just being mashchas the zera of dashmi b'flim v'zarmi b'chutz, that a person allows the shechva zera to not go inside the woman, instead be mashlich haleitzim ba'avanim, that the zera just goes to nowhere, it goes for nothing. Those two isurim might be separable from each other, meaning you might have a situation where a person is not doing niyuf biyad. So he's not, niyuf biyad in English means masturbation. He's not doing niyuf biyad. He's having regular bia, but yet it still might be dash mibfim zor mibchutz. It still might be a situation where he's mashal chalitz and avanim, where the zera is not going anywhere. So the most basic case would be the children of Yehuda, right? What did they do to Tamar? That's Tashmish from Zomri B'chutz. There was no Niyuf Biyad. They were having regular Tashmish, and that's what brought about the Shechva Zera, but then the Shechva Zera ended up outside of her body. It ended up being wasted. So this comes up very often when sperm needs to be tested or implanted. Obviously you need a specimen, you need a specimen, you need to produce sperm. So how do we produce sperm? So the general society, you know, gives the guy a dirty magazine or something, and anyway, it used to be, I don't know, maybe they give him an iPad now, and they send him into the restroom, and then he comes out and with a little test tube, or not a test tube, a little cup that has a sperm in it. We don't recommend that, right? Because while it's not going to be an iser of being matal aleitzim vavanim, being mashlech aleitzim vavanim, because the sperm is being used, but it's still a violation of niyuf biyah. Right, so what we prefer instead is what they call a halachic condom, which along with Shabbos mode ovens is one of the worst branded, misleading brandings of any item in halachic in modern society. Right, Shabbos mode oven does not mean you're allowed to cook on Shabbos, and a halachic condom does not mean that you're allowed to use a condom. What the halachic condom is a condom that's used to collect zera when it's needed, when a couple is not able to conceive in the normal way through normal tashmish, either for health reasons or for fertility reasons, and you need to collect the zera some other way. So it's called a halachic condom. Why a halachic condom? Why not just any condom? Why is a halachic condom any different than any other condom? So most... What?
You let some of the sperm out.
Oh, so some are makbid to do that, but that's not even... I mean, that could ruin the sample. Meaning that I think they've moved away from that. So that was one of the... But the other issue, and the more important issue, is that most condoms contain a spermicide also. So that would be really bad if you're trying to collect the zera to impregnate the woman, so you don't want a spermicide in the condom. So they make condoms that don't have spermicide, and that's a halachic condom. So in that case, you have a situation. This is, I guess if we had shiurim on fertility, it would be, I don't know if we'll have time to do that, but if we had shiurim on fertility, there would be interesting discussions about that, meaning to what extent does a couple have to... go through expenses of because the zera is only viable in these halachic condoms for a short period of time. So very often, if a couple is going to be collecting the zera, they have to get a hotel room near the hospital or near the lab, and that's expensive. And the timing has to be just such. So very often it means the guy's got to take a day off from work, or the woman has to take a day off from work, which all are things that wouldn't have to be done if they were not religious Jews, if they were doing this in the, you know, in the normal way that these things would be done. So there's a lot of, I don't know about a lot, but there is some literature on that, right? On to what extent you have to go out of your way and how often, because a lot of times it doesn't happen on the first try, that this it will happen more than one time to be able to collect the zera. But that's not our conversation for now. We're just discussing this issue of hashchasa zera. The Tosfos Maseches Yevamos on Daf Yud Beis Amud Beis, Divar Maskil Shalosh, says that it's not a violation of Hashchasa Zera if you have regular tashmish, even if you know that there's no chance the woman will become pregnant. It's, meaning one might say, well, wait a second, once your wife is postmenopause or once your wife is pregnant, so then it's Hashchasa Zera every time you have tashmish. So Tosfos says not like that. Tosfos writes, Rabbeinu Tam Omer, Dilifnei Tashmish Vadei Asur Litein Shamoch, Dein Derech Tashmish Bekach. He says to put some cotton or something to block the path of the Zera inside the woman before Tashmish is Asur. Vareu Kamatil Zera Ala Eitzim Vala Avanim. That would be like being Matil the Zera Ala Eitzim Vala Avanim, like just wasting the Zera. Kishamatil Ala Moch, because instead of just going into this piece of cotton, Avalim no senes moch achar tashmish ein nir lasar. He says, but to put the moch in after tashmish to absorb the zera that's already inside of her, that we're not going to aser. This is a form of birth control that people sometimes try. Not the most reliable form of birth control. That after tashmish, just try to wash it all out. Those little sperms could be very fast, and they could have already swam all the way upstream, and washing it all out is a little late afterwards. But anyway, so Tos goes on to say, because as long as the tashmish happens in the normal way, it's fine. How do I know as long as the tashmish happens in the normal way, it's fine, even though you know she's not going to get pregnant because you're doing a form of birth control? He says two things. First of all, we find that you're allowed to have tashmish with a katana, and therefore, it's even though she cannot become pregnant, and an islandess, even though she cannot become pregnant, so we see that it's not called hashchasa zera. So, and he says, what about the woman putting the moch in afterwards? Isn't she destroying the zera? She's not mitzuva puravu. Tosfos says, chiddush, anyone who's not mitzuva puravu is not mitzuva in hashchasa zera either, and therefore there's no isra of hashchasa zera for the isha. Rav Moshe and Ebenezer Chelik Aleph Simon Samach Vav, Ebenezer Chelik Aleph Simon Samach Vav, paskins that a man can have tashmish with a woman who has had a hysterectomy, meaning even though she, there's mamish, there's zero chance of anything happening, there's no rechem to be able to produce a baby, nevertheless it's not a violation of hashchasa zera. So again, the halachic factors we have to take into account with each form of birth control are sirus and hashchasa zera. Once we're past the halachic factor of whether they should be doing birth control at all, health factors are many, many, many. But just to go through a couple, what kind of reaction she might have to different hormones, what kind of other medical conditions she might have or allergies she might have that will cause a reaction with this form of birth control, and how long-term do you need the birth control to be for. There are some methods of birth control that are really inefficient to use for short-term birth control. It's just not worth it, meaning an IUD is something that a doctor has to place inside of her. If you need birth control for 2 months, to put an IUD in is ridiculous, right? But if a couple is looking for a three-year, five-year solution, so then an IUD would make a lot of sense. So when figuring out what type of birth control from a medical perspective, from a health perspective, you want to figure out how long term it's going to be as well. And then the other factors to consider, some of the other factors at least, are the nature of the woman, meaning a birth control might be 100% effective, or close to it, nothing's 100%, but close to it, something that's very, very effective, but that's only if you remember to use it. And some women are just, you know, forgetful. So they just, you know, some people are very good, they're very religious about, you know, like doing, they're very mesudar, and some people just by their nature, they're not mesudar at all. They're always like, whoops, I forgot, you know, so different forms of birth control are better for different kinds of personalities. So that's something that has to be taken into account also. And, you know, there's a certain amount of staining that different types of birth control can cause, which brings about agmas nefesh for a religious Jew, because then you have to worry about all these shilas about ksamim, and even the having to ask the shilas and having these constant sveikos and not knowing whether she's a nida, whether she's not a nida, it could take a toll on a woman and on a couple. So those are some other factors to consider. Those are just like, I didn't say anything. Those are just factors. Yeah.
Just going back to Rabbi Tam. So if the chiddush is that if you're not chayv berubus, there's no iser hashkas las tzera. Wouldn't that mean that a woman who puts a mochin wouldn't be problematic?
Right. That's what he's saying. Right. Meaning.
After
Tashmish. But if Rabbi Tam says if you put it there before Tashmish, then when he's being motzi the zera, he's being motzi the zera and etzim vavan. Meaning he's just doing it right into the cotton, which is like doing it right into a condom, which is Eitzim Vavan.
So maybe even for her it would be fine, but for him it would still be...
Right. It's not her issue, it's his issue. Correct. Right. Okay, so let's get into the different types of birth control. We'll try to go through as many as we can, and we'll go through with each type of birth control the practical issues and the halachic issues that come up. So the most effective type of birth control, the one that's 100%, and the most asur one, there's sometimes a correlation, but is tying the tubes. So you're familiar with tying, what they do is they take the fallopian tubes and they quite literally, well, there are different methods of doing it. One method is that they actually tie it in a way where that egg is never going to meet that sperm, because the egg can't make it as far as where the sperm is going to meet it, because they tied it closed. So now what they do is, even though they call it tying the tubes, what it really is cutting the tubes. Right, meaning they then tie each end, so it's not like an open-ended tube. So they tie or sew shut or seal shut each end but they cut the tube, and you can imagine that is a type of birth control that that makes her totally infertile and blocks any access from the sperm to any potential egg. So that's the most. The most effective way, it's and vasectomies also. So most of the time, it's cutting the tubes, not tying them. It's just the expression people use. Now there is a pasuk in the Torah, as we mentioned before, Vayikra Perichav Beis Umach VeKasus VeNatuk VeKaris Lo Sakriv LaHashem UbaArtzchem Lo Sasim. That you're not allowed to bring a castrated animal as a korban. Oh, and by the way, you're not allowed to do that anywhere. You're not allowed to castrate animal. Forget about korbanos. So there is a discussion in Masech Sanhedrin whether that iser applies to a guy. Does the iser of castrating or of rendering a person or an animal infertile, is that something that a guy is mitzuvah in? So the Gemara Sanhedrin and Vav has a machlokas about this. The Beis Shmuel in Eben Ezer, Simen Hei, Sivkat and Tazayin, says it's a nibaydlu of shita, sort of. It's not a nibaydlu of shita, but it's a machlokas that we've never come to a conclusion on. It's an undecided machlokas. We're not sure. The Aruch HaShulchan thinks that most assume lekula, that most assume a guy is not mitzuba. So that begs the question then. So if a guy is not mitzuba to do the sirus, right? There's no issur for him to do the sirus, and it's only issur for a Jew to do the sirus. Is it issur for a guy to do the sirus on a Jew? Meaning, who's doing an issur? The Jew's not doing any sirus. He's just lying there. The guy is doing the sirus, but he's not mitzuva, if you assume like the Aruch HaShulchan. So the Minchas Chinuch HaMitzvah Reish Sadi Aleph says, Im echot sirus es chavero, af tipin nikif matzinu da nikif chayev im esayeya, kumvor bram perikid beiz miyak malach aleph, kan lo matzinu ze da hanisras yeh over blav. He says, you know, we do have such a concept when it comes to cutting off your payas, There's the makif and the nikif, and if the nikif is misayeya, he moves his head to help the barber get in, you know, the right angle as he shaves off the guy's payas. So there is such an issur of being a nikif when it comes to cutting off your payas. Says Menachas Chinuch, we don't find such a thing by the issur of siras. To become a misuras, there's no such issur. And then he goes on to be told it in two deos in Rashi in Maseches Makos and Tavchav, but he says we can't be mechayev someone who is a misuras. So then, what is the is? Right? What's the problem then of going in? Yeah.
Won't this be taloi by machlokas shachad by Shabbos? Whether there's no issur misayeva by Shabbos to a non-Jew who are lachanya, or who are just misayeva by Nika?
Yeah, I mean, that's what Menachas Chinuch is about morning. I mean, he's going through that issue. Meaning, is nikaf a model or is it an exception? Right. So at the very basic level, it might be amir la'akum, right? Meaning, if anything you're not allowed to do, you're not allowed to ask a guy to do for you. The Gemara in Shabbos, the Gemara in Bamitzir rather, in Daf Tzadi, raises that very question. Whether amir la'akum applies only on Shabbos, or does it apply to anything that's us, or anything I'm not allowed to do? I can't ask a guy to do for me. So the Gemara says that if you bring an animal to a non-Jewish vet to be sterilized, so there's a knas that you have to sell the animal to somebody else. You're allowed to sell it. You're allowed to make money off it, but you're not allowed to keep it. We don't want you to benefit from the sterile animal. So in order not to benefit from the sirus, the Gemara says you have to sell the animal to somebody else. So it's really the same question as to whether B'nai Noach or Mitzuvah and sirus. I mean, the question of whether Amir La'akum applies is the same question, because the given in the sugya, if you look in the Gemara and see it, the given is that you're not allowed to ask a guy to be misaris your animal. This is a major issue for pet owners, right? It's dog owners have to go through that issue, because you can't not be misaris your dog, otherwise it gets all aggressive and it's and it's very difficult to keep. But on the other hand, it's an issur d'oraisa to be misaris your dog, right? So what do you do? So the given in the Gemara is that you're not even allowed to bring it to a non-Jewish vet and ask the vet to be misaris your animal for you. So if amir la'akum applies to shari surim, why can't you do it? Amir la'akum, right? It's that simple. It's just amir la'akum. And that's how Tosos and Rosh Hashanah Daf Chav Dalet Amud Beis paskins. Because Tosa says you can't have a non-Jew sculpt a human image for you. And why? Because Amir Lakum has nothing to do with the Chol Shabbos. The Rav Shechter quotes these Makoros. The Ravid in the first Perek of Klayim holds that when the same way, he says you can't ask a guy to plant Klayim for you. Why? Amir Lakum. If it's us for you to do, you can't ask a non-Jew to do it for you. If you hold that there's no Isra Amir Lakum Bishari Surim, then why is it us to ask the guy to do it for you? So then you must hold that he's mitzvah also, right? Meaning they're connected. You have to hold like that day that he's mitzvah. So what are you doing when you're asking the guy to do it for you? With me either. See, because if a guy were to decide to just be misaris you without your permission, he'd get in big trouble, right? He needs your permission in order to be misaris. He probably, if you go to get your tonsils out and you wake up and you're misuras, he'd lose his medical license, right? So he'd get in very, very big trouble. So he can only do it because you're giving him permission to do it. So that is a violation of Lifnei Iver. Good. So Rav Shechter just points out that the Shitas HaRambam is unique in this regard. It's an interesting vart that Rav Shechter has in that article that was sent out on the WhatsApp group. The Rambam paskins that you can ask a non-Jew to plant. You are allowed to ask a non-Jew to plant klayim for you. It's on that Ravid is commenting on that Rambam that you're allowed to ask a non-Jew to plant klayim for you, which means apparently that Amir la'akum doesn't apply to shari suvim, because you can ask a non-Jew to plant klayim, and yet the Rambam seems to paskin that it's us midoraisa to ask a guy to be misaris your animal. So Shachl explains that the Rambam holds that sirus, which the Gemara in Bamitzi over there compares to the Sachsim Sharbadisho, is an Isr Chalos. And therefore, even a Gram Sirus is included in the Isr Daraisa. What does that mean, it's an Isr Chalos? So we related to this the other day. There's what we can call, the way Rav Yonasan Sachs actually likes to say it, is that there's there are Maiso-oriented mitzvos and Isurim, and Gol-oriented mitzvos and Isurim. Right, a Maisa oriented, did we discuss that? We discussed with Rav Yosef Engel, right? There, a Maisa oriented mitzvah, for example, let's say, is Metilas Lulav. what have you accomplished when you took a lulav? I don't know. Hashem said, I took a lulav. I did what Hashem wanted. Meaning, it's not like, oh, taking a lulav will therefore accomplish what. No, that's the mitzvah, and that's it. It's just that maisa. Then there are certain mitzvahs that are goal oriented. Any mitzvah that's presuming nisa is goal oriented. Meaning, the point is not just that you're doing a maisa of lighting Neros Chanukah. That it's that too, but then there's also an element of presuming Nisa, which is that people will see it. Why is it that when it comes to presuming Nisa mitzvahs, we say Mocha Ksuso, and we don't apply a Mavazi Zali Vazi Zosu Michomesh? You have to sell your clothing to do a mitzvah presuming Nisa. Because by any mitzvah that's mice oriented, it's just between you and Hashem. So the Rebbeinu Shlomo will say, okay, Anus Rechman Apatre, you can't afford it. Good, it's kilo or so, it's as if you did it, it's fine. But when there's a goal to the mitzvah that's supposed to happen down here, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu say, yeah, it's good enough, but no one saw it, but it didn't accomplish what it was supposed to accomplish. So it's never quite good enough. That's how the Avnei Nezer explains by Ner Chanukah, by Presumi Nisa related mitzvahs, that when there's a goal involved, so Shachar explains that the Rambam must hold that Sirus is not in the world of mitzvahs, but in the world of Isurim. It's an Isur to create a chalos where you have a mesuras. Meaning it's not about doing the maisa of Sirus, it's about having Sirus happen. And therefore, even if it's only through a grama, it's indirect. So you say, oh, grama's not a maisa, so I avoided the Isur. No, even through a grama, it's going to be an Isur daraisa. That's Rav Shachter's understanding of the Rambam. It's a great part.
If you say it's just
an
Isser of Amir Lachem, then you have the theorem of Amir Lamira or Amir Shachter.
So that's what they work on with getting your dog spayed and neutered and things like that. Yeah, those are the Haterim that they work with. You give it to one guy, you give it to another guy, and you work through those Haterim. If you say it's an Isser Chalos, it's not going to help, right? That's... yeah, that was I think I mentioned to you guys, the most interesting shaila I ever got was the Kohen in some other country who was becoming a Baal Tshuva, and he was married to a guy, and he decided that if he just gets a Sirus, then he'll be a Petsua Daka, and then he'll be allowed to marry a Gioras. A Kohen can't marry a Gioras, but if he just becomes a Petsua Daka, he'll be allowed to marry a Gioras. It's also to become a Petsua Daka. Yeah, but he's not leaving his wife. He's staying with his wife. There's no, so either he could stay with his wife and violate the Isser of intermarriage of being with a non-Jewish woman every single day for the rest of his life, or he could do one Isser one time by going into a hospital, getting the surgery. He's already 50 years old. He's done having his kids. So he's going to go into the hospital, get one little surgery, and then he'll be mutter to marry, his wife will be Megayer, and everyone will be happy. So the Shaila the rabbi asked is, what does he tell this Kohen? Should he tell him, no, you're not allowed to do that, and we're never going to be Megayer, your wife, and you can't? So Rav Asher Weiss at the time said, you can't tell him to get a Sirus. You can't tell someone to do an Isser. But his cheshbon is probably correct. And therefore you look the other way, you let him do what he does. And then afterwards you'll figure it out. And afterwards, you'll be Megayer the wife. And he said, you know, Maisa, at the end of the day, Lachar Me'eves Roshana, he'll go up to Shemayim, he'll have one more Amir La'akum. You know, the guy has been living with the Shiksa for 30 years, he'll have one more Amir La'akum on that side of the scale. Lachar Me'eves Roshana. And he understood it. I said, Amir La'akum, what do you mean? It's Lifnei Iver Daraisa, if you hold that a guy is Mitzuvah. He said, we don't hold the guy is Mitzuvah. I mean, he holds like the Aruch HaShulchan, that a guy is not Mitzuvah, that it's only Amir La'akum. Okay. What about Sirus for women? So the Rambam in Isur Biyah Perek Tazayin Alach Yiral of Paskins that Hamasaris is Hanakeva Bein Ba'adam Bein B'Shar Minim Pater, the Rambam says. So that clearly means that it's Asir, right? Whenever the Rambam says Pater, he always means Asir. So the Gra, Rav Shechter points out, the Gra in Sivkat Mechath Hei and Ebenezer, Simon Hei over there, quotes the Taurus Kohanim that Minayin Sha'af HaNekevos B'Sirus. Taurus Kohanim says, how do I know that Nekevos are included in Sirus as well? So Tamalom quotes a Pasuk, two different deos what the Pasuk is. So, I'm sorry, no, two different deos whether there is a Pasuk to learn that Nekevos are included in Sirus. And the Gra says, and we pass in the Tanakama, that Nekevos are included in Sirus. So therefore, how do you understand the Rambam that it's Pater? If Nekevos are included in Sirus, it should be Chayiv. So, no, since it's a separate Pasuk, it's a Pasuk that's not Nechayiv Malkus. So, but it's an issur d'oraisa to be misaris a woman as well. That's how the Gra understands. Not all the Nosakei and the Shulchan Aruch are in agreement with that, that it's an issur d'oraisa to be misaris a woman, but that's how the Gra understands. So as far as Sirus, it's not an option from Kapp. I mean, even if they're done having their children, and even if they've already been mekayim puru, we don't mess with the nisur sirus. Why would you? Right, so that's not an option. So all of that was just lagil tor ladir, you know, the first half hour of this discussion. So let's move on to some of the more practical ones. Yeah.
Is it problematic if it's just for health reasons, not related to tashmish, if a woman needs, like for a woman specifically?
Oh no. Sometimes if a woman, let's say, has. ovarian cancer or even like a BRCA gene and she needs to, you know, remove things in order to avoid, so then we're making this thing. That's a pikoch nefesh, meaning that that we're going to be making. What they tell women that have the BRCA gene is to have your family young, right, and then when they're 35, because normally it doesn't happen until they're in their 40s. So they tell them when you're 35, that's when we clean out all the plumbing, and I don't mean to be so crass, but I'm saying that's when they'll and that way they'll have their family, and then of course you do that because otherwise it's pikuach nefesh. So that's it's a los hasei min haTorah, but you're allowed to violate a los hasei min haTorah. Same way a tzaddik guy jumps in his car, right? So that's you violate a los hasei min haTorah for to save someone's life. Now, birth control pills. So let's go from the least shaykh to the most shaykh. Right? Birth control pills are probably the most common form of contraception. There are two types of birth control pills. I mean, there are like 1,000 types, but there are two general categories of birth control pills. Some are a combination of estrogen and progesterone, and they come with a week of placebo usually in a pack. They have 3 weeks of actual pills and a week of placebo, and that week of the placebo allows for the shedding of the uterine lining. And more recently, in recent years, recent decades, I would say, doctors have allowed for and even encouraged doubling up, meaning it's not necessary for her to get her period every month. There's no requirement for her to get her period every month. So if she doesn't have staining issues and it works for her, you know, they even have packs of pills that are 3-month packs where, you know, she only gets her period once every 3 months. Those have caused a lot of women a lot of staining problems and more agamas nefesh than they're worth, but they'll perfect it. They'll get it down eventually. It's only been 60 years since birth control pills started, but they're still working on it. A lot of times I'll get the question: is there something halachically wrong with skipping a period? Meaning, can a woman just double up and not get her period this month, or is there hashkafically wrong with it? Meaning, is there like a gzar dimin hashemayim that a woman has to have a period every month? So I don't see what the problem would be. There's no mitzvah to be a nida. Meaning, if you are a nida, then there are halachos they have to observe. I don't know of any mitzvah to be a nida. It's true. The Gemara does say, so it's true that there is a certain sense of boredom that can set in, and for shalom bayis it's best sometimes to have like a little bit of away time, you know, to have a little bit of time that they're not physically intimate with each other. All of that is true, but who says that has to be every single month? You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be every single month. But again, you just have to make sure that it works for that woman. For a lot of women, when they try to double up, they cause themselves all sorts of problems, and they end up staining, and they end up being in need of more than they would have been had they not played any games with the pills.
About Rip Williams' objection that you're making women into a katana by bringing up birth control.
Yes, I don't think that's what he meant. I don't think that's. I mean, we discussed right. We discussed that the other day about katana. Yeah, I don't know. I didn't speak to Rabbi Williams about it. And the shir I heard from him about it, I didn't. He didn't cover that topic clearly. But I mean, the whole world, Paskins and birth control pills are the best. Are the best form of contraception halachically. And it doesn't have to be a pill. Meaning, the same effect or similar effect can be accomplished by a patch or what they call the Nuva ring, which is like a little plastic ring that she inserts vaginally, and it slowly releases the hormones, and she just leaves it there for 3 weeks. An injection. They have all sorts of ways of. It's just a matter of delivering the hormones to the body. That's what it is. The other type is progesterone only. that it doesn't have any estrogen, only progesterone, and that can come also as a pill or as an injection. It doesn't have a week off. These are the pills that they normally give to nursing women, meaning when a woman is nursing, she'll be on a different birth control pill. So what happened? Why is she on a different birth control pill? Because the estrogen doesn't work well with the milk. It ruins the milk, or affects the milk. So they recommend instead for nursing women progesterone only birth control pill. So if someone comes and says, well, someone came to me today and said, my Kala has a terribly hard time with estrogen, and it's a genetic thing. Her whole family, whenever they have estrogen pills, they get horrible migraines. So, okay, one of the things to ask your doctor is, what about the progesterone-only pills, right? Is that something that would be worthwhile, that would be usable for her? Some women who can't handle the first type of pill can handle that second type of pill. The practical benefits of birth control pills, before we get into the halacha, the practical benefits is that it's extremely effective. If it's taken religiously, it's 99.9% effective. It also does not affect intimacy. Meaning other types of birth control get in the way a little bit with intimacy. This does not affect intimacy. I'm talking purely from a non-Jewish perspective, just from a regular practical perspective. A woman can stop taking them and get pregnant whenever she wants. There's no like regimen that she has to be on, that she has to stick to, that she has to follow it through. Meaning like a woman decides she had an IUD put in 2 months ago. She decides, I want to get pregnant now. Well, now it's going to be scheduling doctor's appointments, seeing when he can remove it. She could just stop taking her pill and she can get pregnant. That's fine. It's totally in her control. There was a misconception for a long time that was out there that after finishing taking the pill, a woman should not get pregnant for a month or two. And I used to get shilas about this, that you're not supposed to get pregnant after finishing the pill for a month or two because it's dangerous, and therefore what should we do in the meantime? Can we use a condom in the meantime? The answer is no, we'll get to that later, but it's also, the metzius is wrong. There's nothing dangerous at all about a woman getting pregnant right after going off of the birth control pill. It can make her periods lighter, the pill. It's another advantage. And it can take away some of the symptoms associated with menstruation. Sometimes if she normally feels crampy or whatever, sometimes the pills help alleviate that. It has drawbacks also. First of all, it costs money, depending on your insurance plan, right? So that's a drawback. Second, and probably more importantly for us, you need to be very regimented about it. Because sometimes a woman takes a pill like 2 hours later than she normally would, and all of a sudden she starts staining. So it's still working, it's still an effective contraception, but for a frum person, that's an issue. Also, some women react very badly to the hormones. It could cause headaches and nausea and mood swings. You can read the back of the thing; it tells you all the things that it can cause. Lack of sexual desire, it could cause vomiting, staining, weight gain. All sorts of fun things. Sometimes you can just switch to a different pill. If one pill is not working, so what's the difference between one pill and the next? Just the ratio of estrogen to progesterone. So sometimes switching to a different pill helps. Other times doctors say don't switch so fast because a lot of the problems go away after a few months. Like you just have to sort of like grin and bear it for the first few months and deal with all of those things, all the staining problems and everything else, but it will clear itself up after a few months of doing it. So that's the practical benefits and drawbacks of birth control pills. What about halacha? So Shulchan Aruch Ibn Ezra Siman Hey Sif Yud Bey says, the Isha Muteris Lishtos Ikrin Kedei L'Sarsa Ad Shelo Teilin, that a woman could drink a certain type of potion that makes her unable to have children. And the Beis Shmuel explains that Sirus Nekeva is only Patra Avalasar when it's done B'maisa. But over here, it's not really a mice of Sirus, it's a gram Sirus, because she's drinking something and that will later have an effect of Sirus. The Gemara in Yevamos, Daf Samachem Beis, tells us that Yehudis debitu de Rabbi Chia, Rabbi Chia's wife, Havalot Sar Leda. Rabbi Chia's wife had terrible, terrible childbirth pains. So, Shani Mana, Va'asya Lekamed Rabbi Chia, Amra Itza Mifkada Piri Verivya, Amra Lo Lom. So she asked Shaila, is a woman chayiv in puruvu? No, woman's not chayiv in puruvu. Azla ishtiya samada akarta. So she said, okay, she drank a kol shalikri. She drank something that will render her infertile. Lasofa glay milsa. Then Rabbi Chia found out it was his wife that had done that. So, meaning the Gemara goes through how there were two, she carried twins that weren't really twins, that the pregnancies were on different tracks. It was a very, very painful and difficult delivery. So the Nosekelim on the Shulchan Aruch, the Beis Shmuel and the Chalkas Machokek, hold that the Torah in the Shulchan Aruch seemed to permit even Shalom B'Makom Tzar. Meaning, even though the context of the kosher liquid in the Gemara was that she was experiencing this terrible tzar leida, Shulchan Aruch doesn't make any mention of that. That even Shalom B'Makom Tzar she's allowed to. However, Rav Shechter quotes in his article that some achronim are machmir to only allow a kosher liquid when there is great tzar. And the geder would be similar to the geder for medicine on Shabbos, chalashei basakana, where we waive isur midrabanan b'makom choli. Rav Shechter in his article speaks about male birth control pills that they were apparently doing research on, and says that it should be a violation of drinking kosher liquid for men. Rav Moshe says he could be makel because it doesn't directly affect the reproductive organ. It's an irrelevant discussion. Meaning, for years, people thought, oh, the male birth control pill, that's going to be the big thing, where the woman doesn't have to remember, the guy just said, any woman who doesn't want to get pregnant that's going to trust, I'm not talking about, meaning, like in the vast market that's out there, I'm not talking about within the firm community where it's married couples who hopefully have a certain trust and understanding. A woman who's going to say, you know, I can't really get pregnant now, and is going to sleep with some guy and trust that he took a pill, like, it's not going to happen. So that's why they just stopped the research. They realized, like, there's no market for such a thing. So you find discussion in Poskim because they're trying to get ahead of the game, but there's no market for that. Yeah.
Why is kosher considered a gram?
It's considered a gram because it doesn't directly, meaning you're not directly touching the reproductive organs. You're not doing anything directly to the reproductive organs.
Even though you know this is going to immediately go through the
body. Yeah. Now, usually, like we said, for a woman to take birth controls, it's the very best form of contraception. Rav Shechter writes in the name of the Torah Chesed Milublin, Ebenezer Simon Mem Dalaros Mem Aleph, that since the Bitut Rabbi Chiya only drank the kosher liquor for medical reasons, somebody who does it for non-medical reasons is in violation of Chavala. Interesting. So Rav Shechter says there's another issue that we haven't thought of, that there's the issue of Chavala. And is right that this might be considered Chavala. Thought was an unusual raya, he says, because after all, look at Igros Moshe. Moshe has a whole discussion why donating blood is not chavala. So apparently, even very minor injuries can count as chavala. Otherwise, why does Moshe have to write a whole tshuva why donating blood is not chavala? Just parenthetically, why does Moshe say it's not chavala when he donates blood? Ramosha has an even more unusual svara over there. Ramosha says, because in the times of the Gemara, they used to do something called Akazas Dam. They used to do bloodletting, and that was considered something that was very healthy. There's a doctor who's a very chashuv doctor in North Shore, sent me a research paper that someone did on why donating blood at regular intervals is healthy. And he said this likely is the health benefit that Chazal were aware of when it comes to Akazas Dam. But Ramesh says that if Hakazas Dam is considered something healthy, so it can't be that, granted, we don't understand the health benefit of Hakazas Dam, but it can't be something that Chazal considered healthy, we're going to call Chavala. Chavala means you're wounding a person, and Hakazas Dam is a health benefit. So that's what Ramesh says. But Rav Shechter refers to that tshuva, Rav Shechter says, you see that Chavala could be on something very minor. So I found that a little bit strange, because, it could be on something very minor, but it has to be a Chavala, right? It has to be a wound of some sort. You take a pin and you stick it in a person, it makes a little mark, it makes a wound. That's chavala. But to have something that affects the inner workings of the body, I don't know that's called chavala. But anyway, Rav Shechter says that maybe that's something to be concerned about. All poskim, pretty much, prefer this to all other forms of contraception. Even Rav Moshe, who is very worried about the birth control pill, said because it's dangerous. But Moshe's concern was that there was sakana. And Rav Shechter also, in his article, refers to sakana, which is no longer true, meaning they figured it out. Meaning it is true that there are certain forms of cancer that apparently research shows that you're more susceptible to breast cancer when you're on the birth control pill for a long time. But they also found that you're less susceptible to some of the more dangerous forms of cancer. So on net, you gain actually, from a cancer risk perspective. Supposedly, that's what Machon Puah wrote in their sefer, that that it's a net gain in terms of danger. What about taking on Shabbos? Can you take a birth? Can a woman take a birth control pill on Shabbos? Because if you can't, then the whole thing's a waste, right? I mean, if she has to skip Shabbos, then she'll bleed all the time, and it's a so post gemar mekel. Rav Shlomo Zalman in Shmir Shabbos Kilchus Perek Lamed Dalet Os Yotes is mekel. Why? Because it doesn't cure anything. It doesn't. It's not something that it's not treating any illness. It doesn't make a person feel better. It doesn't. So it's not a medicine in that sense. I mean, even if you're going to argue about whether a healthy person can take the medication to feel better. About somewhere to feel stronger, so that's because that the person is actually going to feel different. But a woman take a birth control pill, it's not curing anything, it's not making her feel any different. And even on fast days, our posts can generally are makel about swallowing pills on fast days, although in the Sifrei Machon Puah, they quote that the Nishmas Avram writes that there are some poskim in Simin Tov Reishiv Ches and Luchos Yom Kippurim that there are some poskim that are machmir about swallowing pills on a fast day, and as a result, they suggest consulting your doctor about whether she can take the birth control pill vaginally. I mean, the point is, it's just got to get into her system. So if it can get into her system that way also, so maybe on Yom Kippur, in fact, they find apparently that it works better that way, that it's a more efficient way of getting into her system, which is not something she's going to want to do every day. So for Yom Kippur, that's what some of them suggest. I think our poskim are okay, as long as you don't take it with water, to take it on fast days. Yeah.
So according to Rav Shlomo Zalman, if like, let's say, like a 16-year-old girl has like PCOS and takes birth control for that, would she not be allowed to take it on Shabbos? Like, definitely because she's using it because without the birth control, she has like those cramps and stuff like that.
So if it affects her regular functioning, so then she's a chalashe b'sakar anyway, she's allowed to take medicine on Shabbos anyway. Meaning, it's usually a matter, in general, with medicine on Shabbos, usually it's a matter of which heter you're utilizing. Meaning, there are a lot of different heterim dafka with medicine on Shabbos. Tzitz Eliezer is a whole long maracha about why medicine on Shabbos is not as severe in Issud Rabbanan as like every other Issud Rabbanan that exists. And there are lots and lots of cool.
Shouldn't it be like drinking, like a sick person drinking a cup of tea because it makes them feel better?
So a cup of tea is a different heter. That's, like I said, medicine on Shabbos. A cup of tea is a machal bria, meaning it's
right, that's
something
with birth control.
No, it's something that's food.
Because it's
not. Right, this is clearly a medication. This is clearly something that only a drug industry produces. It's not something that a restaurant produces.
So even though a healthy person takes it, you wouldn't be able to use that.
So that's a discussion in the post-Kim Shulchan Aruch, whether a healthy person is a separate hetter. Meaning there's definitely a hetter that the Gemara talks about, a food. You're having chicken soup because you're not feeling so good, but it's food, it's chicken soup. Right? Then there's a separate potential hetter, which is discussed on the page of Shulchan Aruch, whether any time a healthy person is having medicine, is taking medicine, whether that's automatically mutter or not. We're generally machmir about that. I shouldn't say that. Rav Moshe is mekel about that. I think Rabbi Ribiad is very mekel about that also, but a lot of the Eretz Yisrael Dika Poskim are more machmir about that. As far as the Nuva ring, so the Nuva ring, like I mentioned before, it's essentially the same thing. It's just a plastic ring that she inserts and leaves it there for 3 weeks, and it releases those same hormones. The practical benefit of the Nuva ring over the birth control pill is obviously that she doesn't have to remember anything. She can just leave it there for 3 weeks. The side effects are a little more muted because the hormones are more consistent. It's released on a very consistent, more steadily released. And it also doesn't have to go through the digestive system, so it causes less problems on that level. The drawback is that it might fall out. And if it falls out, it's not really particularly useful. So the Nuva ring is it's a very popular type of birth control. The shilies you can get about Nuva ring when you're a Rav are usually not about whether it's okay. I mean, you're not asked about pills either, whether they're okay, because everyone assumes that they're okay, that that's the normal form of birth control. That's what everyone does. The shilies get about nuvaring or chatzitza in a mikveh, that kind of thing. And that we'll get to Bez Hashem and Hilchos Nida, whether the nuvaring needs to be removed when a woman goes to the mikveh. The shaila is just al regalachas, right? What's a chatzitza on the person's body when they go to the mikveh? So there are three zones to the human body. There's the galui, that which is exposed to the atmosphere. There's balua, that which is totally inside and is never exposed to the atmosphere. And then there is the in-between zone called the Beis HaStarim. Right, so if you have a chatzitza on that which is galui, a woman has a chatzitza on her torso, on her arm, or something like that, so that's possible to the mikvah for sure. You have a chatzitza on that which is balua, she has food in her stomach, something like that, that's for sure not going to possible the tevila, and it's even the chachila, you're allowed to have chatzitzas on balua, on that which is totally inside of her. You have a chatzitza on Beis HaStarim, so that passes the tevila, but you don't need the water to hit the Beis HaStarim. You can't have a chatzitza in the Beis HaStarim. That's what the Gemara applies the principle of kolorei lebila and bila makevespo, kolorei lebias mayim and bias mayim makevespo. So what's Beis HaStarim? The inside of her eyelids, inside of the mouth, the bottom of the nose, the right, these parts that are sometimes seen and sometimes not seen. So that's at the armpits. So those parts of the body, you're not allowed to have a chatzitza on, but it's not going to possible the tefillin. So the shaila is, when a woman inserts a nuva ring, is that in a Beis HaStarim or is it balua? So if it's in balua, so then for sure it's fine. She doesn't need to take the nuva ring out. By the way, taking the nuva ring out for a short time does not affect its effectiveness, meaning it's fine. She just has to find it afterwards, not lose it. But it doesn't ruin it. In any way. If she takes out for like 24 hours, that would be a problem. But if she takes out for just an hour, it would not be a problem. But the question is that called balua or Beis HaStarim? So that's an interesting discussion. Maybe we'll have that when we get there. Because Misvara, what would you say? It would seem to be balua. Like, when is that part of her body ever exposed, right? So the problem is that Poskim, and we'll get to it again, but Poskim discuss dafka ba'osu makam shalisha, how far up is still considered Beis HaStarim and balua, and poskim, some of the poskim use the geder of ad makam shashamish dash, that it's as far as the husband's aver gets, which is pretty far up to consider something a Beis HaStarim. So logically I can't really figure out why, but if that's what poskim say, so then if the nuvaring, now the nuvaring when, during Tashmish gets pushed further up, meaning it doesn't get in the way of Tashmish. But when she goes to the mikvah, I don't know if it's further up, right? It may be lower down. So that's the real issue you come up with the nuvaring, is a chatzitza issue. You don't normally get shailas about the nuvaring.
Did she put it in? The doctor put it in?
She puts it in. No, it's a simple thing. It's a little piece of plastic that just sticks inside of herself and slow release hormone.
And is she not supposed to have Tashmish?
Totally normal. Everything. That's why it's a very popular form of birth control. It doesn't get in the way of Tashmish. The husband doesn't feel it. It doesn't, and just releases the hormones into her body. Should we get into the condom today? I will go through practical condom, and then we'll get tomorrow the halachos. We have time, right? We have 8 minutes. Okay, so as far as a condom is concerned, the practical advantages of a condom, the reason why they're giving them out in high schools, you know, throughout the country, is that it's cheap, it's easy to use, and it also prevents STDs, and you don't need a doctor, right? So those are some very good practical benefits for people who are not worried about the Torah. Disadvantages, practically, of a condom is that while it should be foolproof, it has about a 10% failure rate, which is crazy when you think about it. Why does it have a 10% failure rate? So that's because people either don't know how to use it, which is like stunning, that people don't know how to use it, or that it rips. And if they rip it, then it's it's not very useful if you have a ripped condom. And that's why they add spermicide to it. So as an extra measure of protection, and that's why we need the kosher condoms that Machon Pua has to collect zera. The disadvantage from a practical perspective is also that it minimizes hanas tashmish, supposedly. The halacha issue of condoms is that almost all posts can view it as an absolute violation of being mashal chaleitzim v'avadim, and therefore an iser al pi pshuto midaraisa of hashchas zera. So yeah, so that's a problem. That's the shita of the Shevet Sofer in Ebenezer Simon Beis, the Marsham in Chelek Gimel, the Shut Marash Engel in Chelek Ches, Yabia Omer collects all of these, Chelek Yud, Ebenezer Simon Chavdalid, Tzitz Eliezer, Chelktes, Minunalch. You don't need to list the poskim. It's all the poskim all that way. There are two more extreme approaches in poskim, though, that bear mentioning, one in each direction. Some poskim go so far as to say that tashmish with a condom is not even tashmish, because the guy was not with the woman. The guy had tashmish with a condom. So there was this thing between his body and her body. So that's not tashmish. That would obviously, from a hashchas zera perspective, make it bad, right? Very bad. Where does that come in handy? So some poskim will use this at least as a sniff if a woman cheated on her husband and they want to get back together. So she's a surah labayla. So if the guy that she cheated with used a condom, sometimes poskim will use that as a sniff. Rav Shai Shachter told me that Rav Asher Weiss deals with this Meisim B'chol Yom of women cheating on their husbands and dealing with the Shaila, therapists coming to ask him the Shaila, what do I do because this woman says she cheated on her husband. I think that's a guzma. I don't think it's Meisim B'chol Yom, but Rav Asher Weiss will often say that do a little more research, because most often, and this was surprising to me, but this is what Rav Asher Weiss said, that most often he finds that when a woman cheated on her husband, she stopped short of actual tashmish. She's upset at her husband, she feels unfulfilled in her marriage, v'chule, v'chule, whatever it is that's causing her to do these terrible isurim, and she's doing terrible isurim, but to get to that point, that she does actual tashmish, very often she stops short of that. So she does not actually become a surah labayla. In cases where there was actual tashmish, some poskim will say this is not an act of tashmish if there was a condom involved. Wow. The other extreme shita, Rav Moshe and Eben Ezra Chelek Aleph Siman Samach Gimel quotes from Rav Chaim Ozer. Rav Shachter has this in his article. He quotes from the Achiezer that Rav Chaim Ozer thought that condoms are a natural form of tashmish and are therefore mutter, just like having tashmish with a pregnant wife. Meaning, even though it can't impregnate her, but it's a natural way to have tashmish. Now, if you look in Achiezer, Rav Shachter points out, Rav Chaim Ozer did not really say that. Rav Chaim Ozer is specifically in Chelek Gimel of Achiezer, Siman Chav Dalet Osei. He's dealing with a case where it would be dangerous for a woman to get pregnant. And that's where Rav Chaim Ozer says you could use a condom. Even then, it's a chiddush. It's a chiddush. But that's as far as he went. He wasn't saying that you could stop using a condom. Chaim Ozer even holds that a diaphragm is only considered kederach kol haaretz if it's dangerous for her to get pregnant, meaning he considers the circumstance into what's called derech tashmish. That gets, it's nichnas l'cheshbon of what I call being mishamish kederach kol haaretz, is what are the circumstances around this tashmish, which is why. What if it would be dangerous for her to get pregnant? She's not a candidate for pills, which happens. Or and because it's dangerous to get pregnant, you don't want to use a diaphragm because it's not enough of a guarantee. So most poskim say that it's asra filu b'makam sakana, because it's not pikuach nefesh. Meaning, you just don't have tashmish. You can't call it pikuach nefesh if she's going to choose to have tashmish. If you don't have tashmish, then you want a pikuach nefesh. Rav Neubert, however, quotes from Rosh Hashanah Zalman that you can make a little hole at the end of the condom, as long as you have to know how to do that without causing the whole condom to tear open, because then it will be absolutely useless. But a little tiny hole that might let some sperm through. She may not want to take that risk. In Tshuva's Dvar Elio, Simon Samachay, and in the Achiezer, in that same Tshuva, they allow it when it's dangerous for her to become pregnant, based on Tikuach Nefesh, because it's the only way to fulfill the mitzvah sona, and it's not an Isra Zara Levatala, since it's onus. And some poskim are willing to rely on this for a very short period of time. You will find even Bizmanenu, even though Chaim Ozer was a Das Yachid, there will be poskim that will rely on it. And we'll discuss some of the extreme circumstances, hopefully we'll get to it, to discuss some of the extreme circumstances where we may have to, where shailas come up. Some are mekel b'makom igun, to use a condom. What's igun? So that's a further debate. What do we consider makom igun? So Rav Yaakov Ariel said if a couple is going to be apart from each other for 2 months, that's makom igun. That's quite a chiddush. 2 months. Sometimes a woman has staining problems that are apart from each other for more than that. The Dvar Elio says 6 months. Meaning we had the shaila with Zika. Maybe we'll discuss it when the Zika virus was happening. So the shaila was whether people can use a condom if a guy had, the wife was in childbearing years, was pregnant, and it was very dangerous for her, and he tested positive or was just in Florida and got a mosquito bite or something, so can use condoms in that case. So the question was, how long term is it going to be? I remember I was with Rav Asher Weiss at the time, and Rabbi Dr. Glatt was going through the whole Indian with him. Rabbi Sablowski and Rabbi Shai Schechter and me, I think it was just the three of us with Rav Asher Weiss, and Dr. Glatt was on the phone. And afterwards, Rabbi Sablowski said, I thought we were talking about Yevamos. He kept on talking about Zika. He wasn't familiar with the whole last thing, if he has an STD, let's say AIDS, and no other contraceptive will help, so the Shevet HaLevi is Mekel in that case, because it's the only form of birth control that actually prevents STDs. Considering the Shita that there's no Yisrael Tzazel Vatala by someone who's not Roy Laholit, he uses that as a sniff Lahakel. In the Sifrei Mechlem Pua, they say that Rav Dov Feinstein was Mekel in that case as well. However, Rav Shlomo Zalman and Rav Eliashiv thought that even in that case, that it's Aser. So these are, weighty shailas. These are serious, serious shailas that need to be addressed when lo aleinu, if they come up. What we haven't gotten to yet, and Beis Hashem will say for tomorrow, diaphragm, spermicide, IUD, morning after pill, safe days. You know what safe days are? Only have tashmish when she can't become pregnant anyway. And there are a couple of others that maybe we'll get to. So Beis Hashem will try to get to some of those tomorrow. Okay.